Can we talk about a song by Safari Town?
Your sound.
I'm getting more nervous the closer we get to this.
I don't know if I should hold my books or put them down or read my notes. Or
the first, like, 40 episodes of Game of Thrones that I was on, I said maybe a combination of 9 words.
The first episode you were on, Adam, mm-hmm. We recorded exactly the same way.
I know.
Sharing a mic.
We did.
I'm going to try not to cough too much. I'm getting over a thing.
It's cool.
So, there's nothing you could do wrong.
Whenever you cough, okay. Just make sure to cough right into the mic.
Right. Like, do I need to, like, hide and do all,
no.
Like, get rid, okay.
We should probably talk about how we met on the internet.
Okay.
We met on the internet through Google.
What? I don't know. I don't even know this.
I told you the story, but I'm keeping it, like, I'm telling it in blocks. I'm going to start at the very beginning. So I'm going to give Google the credit.
Okay.
More specifically, search engine optimization. 2011 to 2013. That was a buzzword. People were really excited about it. I still get spam emails
about it. Is
that
what SEO means?
Search engine optimization. Okay. Hannah's moving her hands. She's like, you want it? We still get spam emails to this day.
Yeah.
Actually, the Game of Thrones email address gets spam emails all the time. And it's like, this is why your competition is crushing you. And it's, yeah. it's like search related. But that's not always true. But in this case... I felt so lucky, and I felt like it was, I've told you this before, so if it feels like I'm coming on too strong, just tell me. But thanks to Google, I was looking up, I can't remember, I was maybe some evidence to support a line of thinking mm-hmm. about a particular, I believe it was a Winds of Winter sample chapter. I could be wrong. I think it was The Forsaken, or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And so it might have been Bacchylon that was pulled up. Mm. I'm not sure how I got... sent your direction specifically, but mm-hmm. Through Google, your website, Fattest Leech of Ice and Fire, came up.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and I told you before, I met one of my friends the same way, Emmett Booth, writes about Song of Ice and Fire, and originally on Tumblr as well.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Quentin, I found his stuff the same exact way. Mm-hmm. Sort of like looking into, do you remember when we were younger, you would find... It's like that was how the trails of everything started. You'd finish maybe a Potter book, and then you would start digging even further. And you're like, what is a switching spell? Like, mm-hmm. what was that Easter egg that was dropped within it that now all these people that I feel like I could really closely relate to
mm-hmm.
are talking about on the internet, and now I feel involved, and now I sort of found my place.
I mean, that's how we got here. With the Song of Ice and Fire, too.
Right.
Not just with Harry Potter.
And so that's how I made friends with Emmett originally, talking about the sweeping score of potential savagery mm-hmm. from the hand of Euron Greyjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then through A Song of Ice and Fire, again, researched this late in the game, which, looking back, will probably not be late in the game at some point, as we're still waiting for two of the Song of Ice and Fire books.
Mm-hmm.
I found your website. And again, just a kindred spirit in the story. And I'm really glad that we can talk to you today about this stuff. This is cool. So thanks for being here.
Thank you. What a very long, beautiful introduction. Nice.
Thanks for being here in person with us. It's so handy that you live so close to Hannah.
Yes.
This is perfect.
That was my plan all along.
We worked it out specifically that way. Yeah, it's awesome. We don't often get to record with guests like in the same room as us, which is exciting. We record in person a lot of times, mm-hmm. but it kind of just like makes the vibe more real. I don't know, more legit. Do you want to introduce yourself, though, after?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Googling and finding people because you have questions and you have ideas and you're looking for a little bit of closure to some questions. That's how I found that there was even a fandom for Ice and Fire mm-hmm. to begin with. A friend of mine who we share books back and forth and, hey, you know, you'll love this, read this, don't read this one, blah, blah, blah. He stopped reading Ice and Fire. I know. I know.
How far did he get in? Like, Bran gets pushed off the tower and he's like, now, turning away from this.
He got to like 2 or 3 chapters into dance, and then he stopped. I know.
He made it all the way through Feast.
Mm-hmm. He did. He travel-logged his way through Feast.
He reached Nimble Dick and he's like, all right, this is worth sticking around for.
And he stopped. And so I had nobody to rely on to, like, you know, bounce ideas from. And I did the same thing. I was Googling. I found out that there was even a fandom, mm-hmm. that there was a wiki, and that the forums, various forums, and
it people, always begins with forums.
Yes.
And
Gateway. Yes, it is. That's opening the gates of mm-hmm. Korlos, if we want to stick with Martin World stuff. I don't know. From there, I was familiar, like a lot of people, with just a few George stories from before. And some of them I didn't even realize until later, after going back and looking at things, that it was George. And that was, what was it, Sand Kings?
My favorite one.
Sand Kings and Song for Laia and Night Flyers. Mm-hmm. And which Sand Kings was the one that I was like, oh my God, that was him. No yeah. wonder I didn't remember the name of the author, but I remembered the story.
Mm-hmm. And the vibes.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And from there I started finding more of his older work and acquiring it somehow. Some of it at first was just through the Dream Songs and through Audible and things like that. I'm like, no, I need this other story, and I need this other story, and I need this other story, because that's how
the collection begins. Yeah,
that's how it begins. Yeah. So now I have like all of his books. Probably about 90% of them are the original first prints home.
Very yeah, cool.
And I realized with those, one of the reasons why I loved them so much is the original artwork that yes. goes with
oh,
it.
Yes.
And there was some on your blog, there's some snippets in some of your posts from yes. some of the, with the original work, which I always feel like mm-hmm. adds such a nice touch, which you don't get in the
no.
Dream Songs.
Yeah. I mean, the artwork on like that front plate for each cool. of the story, it's very cool.
Yeah. It's just different.
It's just different. Yeah. Especially when you're getting artwork from a person at the time that's sort of in the same weird headspace as yeah. the artist at the time.
Yeah.
Or the author at the time. Yeah. So it's kind of like, whoa.
You think those people might have been in the same cliques as well, or at least closely related during those times? Like, how connective was or were these communities?
I mean, George, I can only
stories to these
magazines? I can only guess from our own experience in like the sci-fi fantasy convention world, not knowing anything. And you might actually know the answer to this question, so maybe I should just shut up. But no, I feel like there's so much overlap and so much what's the word I'm thinking of? Like collaboration over mm-hmm. your friends and like your squad.
Maybe he knew. Maybe he had the person in mind to mm-hmm. do this yeah. art or something like that, like during the process, or maybe it was like a tandem thing. It just seems like whenever I've been prior to recording this episode, and a lot of it honestly sparked by reading your blog, the vast amount of stuff that we have to look into outside of George's work has always been obvious to me. Mm-hmm. But I've been really focused on A Song of Ice and Fire because of the podcast for so long. It's sort of given a reason to put a mechanic behind what would be like a broad exploration if I didn't have this to hold me on the rails for. And it feels like I've been cheating myself a little bit because of that. But I've also been telling myself that it's for a reason. Like, it's always for a reason, because for me, it's been interesting to sort of document the process of my experience and my friend's experience and everybody else who's been listening along with us and writing in mm-hmm. the journey of A Song of Ice and Fire or the TV series from the beginning, hopefully through its better end that we'll be able to like look back on
yeah.
and see different changes along the process of.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like for me this summer after the series, when we were getting into the Winds and Winter sample chapters, it was just, it's been so long. And now that the story has seen its end in some way, mm-hmm. the TV show, I felt like I got more permission to kind of let my curiosity take me in directions. And then I found your website, and I felt like you were the perfect person to talk about the sort of broader scope of when I think of an author putting their, and I feel like, again, I feel like you see it in this way too, just trying to get into your words, like I have gotten into George's mm-hmm. words as well, like trying to figure you out, like I've been figuring, like I've been trying to figure him out. Mm-hmm. My question is, I feel like an author is imbuing what they know mm-hmm. about the world mm-hmm. into their stories.
Yes.
And if I'm curious enough to apply the stuff that I learned when I was a little kid reading books in the library into those books, then maybe I can learn something about this world through that. Mm-hmm. And so I want to know what you know, being so close to his text, about this place and about the what he's trying to say with the Song of Ice and Fire, mm-hmm. and sort of greater message throughout all of his stories, because I feel like there's constant themes throughout all of this, and a lot of it is actually really connected as well.
Because he's written so much. That's such a broad question.
It's true. But I mean, there's the evidence is there, and we have like decades now of stuff to pull from.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
And not just solely that we have decades of it, because he's been writing and publishing for longer than most of us have even been alive. We have endings to stories, mm-hmm. and I don't mean that in a negative way. but we see over and over again how he's concluding these things. So he starts with his buildup. You know, he might be drawing from some Greek myth or from Shakespeare or something like that. But
Chris Christopherson song.
Yes. Yes. That is exactly right. So he might start with this, but as he says, he takes all of these things and he gels them into something that is uniquely his own. And then why I think it's more important to read lots of George stories to find his own trail rather than just relying on, oh, okay, this is Persephone, so it's going to start in middle and then end exactly this way. I'm like, no, that's not the full story. Mm-hmm. Right. At least that's not the way Martin tends to do it. He's always reinventing what we already know, because we already know. We already know the ending to that, and he doesn't want to just repeat something that's already been done by somebody else. And I've said a few times, and I wonder if this is true or not, and I think I always go back to it, to thinking that really, yeah, this is true. A lot of his, what we're seeing in Ice and Fire now is the quilt work of all of his stuff coming mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. So you can't just say, oh, this is just like Sand Kings, so it's going to be just like Sand Kings. Well, no, Sand Kings is like one swatch.
Well, and Ice and Fire is his biggest
undertaking
a project, and so it's like a whole different beast in terms of. And I like the quilt idea. I think mm-hmm. it's really fascinating as we look at how he's written so many novellas and so mm-hmm. many shorter stories. Kind of how all those little pieces come together.
And I love his short stories because
he's really good at them.
He really is, because they're it's all meat in there, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what's so good about it.
It's to the point, but he still has a way of like leaving some things open and, you know, mysterious at the end. But
and the tension of his short stories is just so perfectly paced, I feel like, in so many of these.
Yes.
Like when you're reading a song for, when you're, I have to remember that we're sharing a mic. Sorry, everyone. When you're reading a song for Laya and you read Syntha Leather for the first time, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, mm-hmm. I know where we are. Mm-hmm. I get it. I know what you've done. I see where you're going, and I see your awareness. And he did that at 25, which is so impressive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh my God!
Like,
yeah,
like the world, the world building in that. That's amazing. there's teams of adults right now working on things like video games that are like drawing from inspirations from moments like that, stories. Yeah. And I think that, like you were saying, the quilt of all that coming together, and his sort of sense of space and timing and awareness, and really mm-hmm. just knowing like what you want, mm-hmm. knowing how to give it to you, at least literally. I don't know how he is in real life because I've never hung out with him in person, but he's got to be like dangerously charming, you know? He's got to be. Hannah's shaking her head. See, I'm like wishful thinking. I'm like, this guy's a superhero, right? Because he knows exactly how to. How weird is he?
I'm not trying to. He's a very nice person.
Well, I'm gonna see, since you guys have both met him, I'm just gonna sit back and again, and this is for everyone else listening to keep pretending. Like, just imagine J.K. Rowling never had Twitter.
Wow.
I'm just gonna keep pretending like that our heroes can be heroes for a little bit longer. But
meeting George R. R. Martin made me like him more.
Okay.
Because I met him a couple times, like just at like con parties. Mm-hmm. And I just love that vibe. I was just like, he was just a normal. I've met so many of him at so many conventions. It just warmed my heart that
to know.
He seemed like he was just still so true to this thing that I love and that he loved. I was not disappointed after meeting him.
Well, underneath all that humanity is someone who can put together the chapters like he does.
Yeah.
And I feel like what he's done with The Song of Ice and Fire is take that same sort of sense of space and hack the novel. Or hack the long form novel and take these points of view just a little bit further at a time. And maybe he walks away from it for a really long time. And maybe that's why Winds and other books take him so long to write. It's like he understands this sense of space, like you were talking about, these short stories so well that he's able to like really draw out the right moments and emotions. And it's probably difficult when you're trying to weave the tapestry together under one hardcover. And make it all make sense and relay with one another. Do you remember the name of his editor?
The Miranese Knot.
Is her name Anne? The name of his. Anyway, she's performing miracles. That's what's happening. If his
editor.
Yeah.
Yeah, Anne Grohl.
Yes.
Yeah.
She must be performing miracles if he's taking, because it seems like he's filling out like we're saying this certain size of story, and he's able to give you the beats and create that tension in such a powerful way. But extending it over the whole of A Song of Ice and Fire has probably proven to be pretty difficult. I'm curious to how that's been. But.
Yeah. Well, so can I narrow down some of the questions that you've been asking into? I think that there's a lot of ground that we could cover. And let's see. I'm trying to phrase this question. I have very specific questions about some of the different readings that we had. Okay. But I also have some just like very broad, general, overall questions.
We should tell people at home what we've done ahead of the episode. Like, we've read a couple of George's short stories, and in general, we're just talking to Leach today about A Song of Ice and Fire, about George's work, if you haven't noticed, and obviously some of his other stories, and seeing how we can relate all of that back to the rest of the stuff that we're talking about on the podcast for everyone.
Right. So what would you say from, because you probably know more almost than anybody else I've come across in terms of after reading your blog, more about what's the phrase that you use to describe like George R. Martin's
Martin
world?
Martin world?
Yeah.
Martin world.
Yeah. You are an expert in that. And so what are some of the biggest lessons that you feel like we can take away from there? Like, what would you say to people, what one of the benefits of being well-versed in his other stories might be?
There are multi-levels of, well, there's definitely multi-levels of power, and with the whole power corrupts idea, that's a huge one, because that can come from corporate, that can come from religion, that can come from somebody's ruling, that can come from somebody like in Bitter, you know, even as small as what happens in Bitter Blooms, you know, a type of manipulation. And with that, the hero, let's just say, the hero of the protagonist of the story has to have a moment of enlightenment, and this in the true sense of the word, which is gained knowledge, which allows you to take that cup of ice, cup of fire decision. That's kind of how I think of it. And it's choice. So everything comes down to choice. But it leads up to a choice. Just like George says, there's an interview, I have it linked somewhere, that villains aren't born, they're made. They're essentially the sum of all of their experiences. So and I think he used, you know, what happens to the little baby orcs and their little baby orc cradles and stuff like that. Are they just born evil? Mm-hmm. They're not. You know, we have it within us to to make a choice to go one way or the other. So, and I think that's why, for me at least, so many of these stories are so even gut-wrenching, mm-hmm. and even for a short story, is because they cut to the truth really quickly, yes. sometimes in a gritty way. Mm-hmm. People like to joke about the story Meat House Man as being like just weird and creepy because it's a guy having sex with a, you know, a dead person.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That wasn't on our list today, but I'm really sad that it wasn't.
that story is probably easily my top one or two.
Is it the body's POV or the person's POV?
Sometimes I wish we could get that body's POV. Like, oh my God, can this guy just stop?
Right, exactly. Like, what is he trying right now? What does he think he's doing?
But there's actually, people focus on like the weird part of the story, but there's actually other, you know, corpse handling that happens. I know. There's other things that happen. And it's actually a really sad story by the time you get to the end and you sit back and you think about it. And this is actually one of the stories that I got to talk to George about in person. And it's one that is pretty as close to being a section out of his own personal diary as possible. Very cool.
That's awesome.
Well, how can I talk to you about that without spoiling myself on it? You say it comes from his personal diary. How?
Well, it's close to it. Thank God he partnered up with Harlan Ellison because that was just the exact type of author friend to help push him to get this story done in the way that it ended up. And because it's about self-control and making choices and love lost and love almost gained and where you end up in the end. And this is not necessarily it doesn't have a happy ending or not, and no mm-hmm. pun intended with that, yeah. but does it have a happy ending or not? And I think it was very personal for him because it came at a time where he had a lot of, you know, his own tragedy in his life. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and so many of, and what we read today with The Glass Flower and Song mm-hmm. for the Night talk about wondering if these are happy endings or not, like very open ended.
Yes. Yeah.
Gray area endings that have a lot to do with some of these major themes that we're seeing in A Song of Ice and Fire with like religion and mm-hmm. interpersonal relationships and power dynamics. And mm-hmm. I think that it's just cool to see him as prolific of an author as he is. I think it's easy to forget that he has written so many other things. Like, we're so focused on this Song of Ice and Fire wormhole that
to kind of
see some of these similarities is really cool.
It's kind of like being on the inside. Imagine if you were someone who was watching the TV series for A Song of Ice and Fire plot only, and there's a million reasons in my head. I can't relate to that because I'm like, how do you not tear through those books? But I'm doing the same thing right now with The Witcher. I don't know if you've seen any of that mm-hmm. yet, but did you like it?
Mm-hmm.
I liked it too. I was like, well, this is I've never played the video game.
Mm-hmm.
I've never read the books, but it's one of those that people have been telling me to check out. And usually when something's adapted off of a video game, like I read the Halo books that were off that shooter and they were super satisfying, but not that great. I didn't start a podcast about them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But they were fun. The aliens were much scarier. You know, like in the game, you're just dodging their plasma, but in the books, that's plasma coming at you. Like that will carve through you and all your friends without stopping.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
That kind of thing. I feel like there's a version of people that, like I said, I don't quite relate to, but I also do relate to because I'm doing the same with The Witcher, that don't dive into the rest of the story that's available for them, even mm-hmm. though it's there. So let's say it's the end of season 3, it's the end of season 4, and you're curious about the small cliffhanger, like White Walker baby getting changed by this like strange looking powerful other. Like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
You could potentially, if you didn't know any better, obviously everyone listening knows that we still don't know about any of that officially, But you could potentially think at that time that if you were to dive into the books that were available for you, like some of these answers would be given to you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's another layer on top of that for people that are deep into Song of Ice and Fire, that they may be able to access a new level of understanding of A Song of Ice and Fire through going back and reading these stories from mm-hmm. George.
Yes.
And that's so fascinating to me. Again, like I said earlier in the episode, I feel like I've been limiting myself, and some of you listening may have too, if you feel like your life is busy and there's other stuff to do. But if you really love A Song of Ice and Fire, I'm telling you, there's a perspective and an insight to be gained from going through this. And that's what you've been exploring on your blog, mm-hmm. among other things. But specifically, that's spoken to me a lot. And I'm unsure about how much confidence I want to put into it, obviously, because it really shows you kind of how human, like, the story that we're obsessing over is. It is crafted by a person who is sort of repeating some of these ideas and some of these themes. But I don't, like you said, the answer, it's like he's exploring the same sort of stories, but maybe just giving us more detail. Mm-hmm. And maybe it seems like, and this is what I think makes good stories really good, imbuing the characters within A Song of Ice and Fire with enough humanity, with enough truth, like he's a god just breathing it on them, that it almost seems like they might make those choices on their own. Mm-hmm. Like it might jump out of the page.
He might even, I mean, and I think some authors might even argue that characters make choices on their own.
Exactly.
Yes. Know? Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that, again, it's just a, I'm sort of hesitant to almost do the digging. It'd mm-hmm. be like going into the, it's like going at the highest level. If you're like, you're a Freemason and they're mm-hmm. like, okay, here's the secret.
You don't want to know too much.
Like, we're carpenters. Right.
You don't want to know too much.
But I kind of do at the same time. So I feel conflicted. There are those of us who really want to know all the answers.
Yes.
And there's some of us who are, you know, kind of like, all right, well, how's this going to go? Where do you stand on that?
Yes. No, that's good because, the way I've described it before, you know, chatting with people online and such, is you can read all of his books, you can write whatever, however many blog posts and stuff you want. It's not going to give you the actual answers to anything, but you're going to see the pattern enough that you have a pretty good idea of where this is going, because it's happened not just once, not just twice, but here, 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 and here. Mm-hmm. It's he has the same ingredients mm-hmm. mixed around a little bit, depending on setting, depending on if it's part of a long-running series or not. And it gave me a lot of peace of mind, and it took away a lot of stress about, we need When's the Winner Now? Right. We need When's the Winner Now?
There's so much to explore.
There is so much to explore. Mm-hmm. And there are different levels of people that are interested in more information or not. So what I've tried, one of the reasons, besides trying to keep my thoughts organized with writing this stuff down and transcribing stories now and adding some notes, talking points along the way, is for those people that don't have access to the old stories, mm-hmm. It's there. Mm-hmm. And so if they do want to know more, it's there. Even for me, if I propose my own speculation on something, I'm like, I like to, you know, at least show that it came from somewhere,
yeah.
not just out of thin air. So for the people that do want to know more, mm-hmm. because they want to understand maybe George as a person outside of just Ice and Fire. I'm just trying to help make it accessible to people.
I think that's awesome. Because yeah, I think cool. when I first started reading so many of his other works, it feels inaccessible because mm-hmm. it's in these anthologies and all these things that are out of print or that are hard to find.
Yes,
or
yeah.
Things like that. And so I think putting out as much information out there as possible. And I think that you, something that I really enjoy in the way that you are transcribing them is that there's so much of A Song of Ice and Fire kind of mixed in there. So mm-hmm. we're reading a couple paragraphs and then you're like, hey, we'll pay attention to XYZ awesome. Because this matters because we've seen this before here and there. Mm-hmm. We might see this again here or there. I think it's a really fun exercise. And so what I did as I was preparing for this episode is I read the stories on their own because I have my own copies and then kind of got to read along with you. It's like book yeah. club in the best way yeah, possible.
Exactly. That was yeah. my goal is yeah. like I want people to like you know, those that are interested in going beyond just Ice and Fire, you know, that, yeah, getting people together to chat about it. And you can either take my notes as a jumping off point or just skip right over. Exactly. It doesn't, because I don't.
I'm here to argue with you. You're wrong.
Well, that's so, green, not red.
How much of when you're doing that are you looking at endgame stuff? And how much of when you're doing that are you looking to kind of back up other theories and ideas of kind of tropes and themes that we've seen throughout A Song of Ice and Fire? Probably a little bit of a combination of both, but...
Yeah, a lot of it reveals itself. And that's one of the reasons why I like typing them. I mean, because I do, I type them out. One line at a time.
I've heard of that trick. It's like being in the mind of the author.
It well, and you do. It's it slows you down. You know, it's different than just listening to it or, you know, opening up your copy of it.
It really is intimate getting in there.
It is, because you're typing it out. You're like, wait a minute, this is, wait a minute, Bran said this. Wait a minute, wait a minute. So all of a sudden, it takes you like 3 hours to like finish typing this one paragraph, because that's when you're like, wait a minute, that happens in this story and this story and this story, and then you note it, you're like, okay, I think this might be important. That's when those type of ideas come to mind. So
I'm really interested in from A Song of Light. That's my favorite one of the ones that you read. That's one, the one I want to talk about the most. So I'm just gonna talk about it the most.
Okay.
It talks, it's a lot about religion.
Yes.
And a lot about being, I don't know how to, what the right word is, because I keep thinking tricked and coerced, and know that I don't believe either of those things are necessarily true. But converting into a religion, you make a lot of interesting points, and there are a little lot of interesting overlaps in terms of what it means in A Song of Ice and Fire to be part of a religion or to partake in cultish type of like activities and kind of what that means for you as a character. We look at like everybody from Melisandre to Bran to everybody in between who's participating in some sort of religious experiences, whether it's with the old gods or new gods or, you know, Lord of Light, all this type of thing. So I think that one of the most fascinating things for me in George R. R. Martin's writing is just his emphasis on religion and kind of his fascination with faith. And that's something that I'm fascinated with. And so I kind of really pick up a lot on that. I don't know where my question is in that.
Well, that's the idea of religion and faith or and magic is the one thing that I feel like I can't quite settle on.
That's what I was going to ask you about.
It's like as soon as I find my answer, I'm like, all right, this is it. This is it. And then
it seems like George R. R. Martin can't settle on it either.
And you know? I agree.
As far as he's gotten as well.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. Because he understands that religion is in faith and belief in different levels or on different levels is there in humans, and it's he doesn't seem to me like he's against religion. Like if you have a faith or whatever, that's fine. What it seems like to me is that he's against it when you try to militarize it against something, when you try to make it some sort of extreme. And then that's, but then again, that's going back to the what I was saying before about the whole power corrupts idea and your choice, and that choice leads to something else. I mean, I think even he and Paris had some sort of like a quasi-naturalistic or pagan-style wedding or something. So I don't think he's against any of that. I think it's just when you take it to an extreme. But then how much magic is true in the story and how much how much is burgeoning science?
Right.
And how much is
for show?
Yes.
Which is so much of like Melisandre's journey.
With her little powders and stuff like that. And but even with that, you start to find patterns. With Melisandre and her magic, or with a lot of the fire magic, or the fire faith believers, there's a lot of patterning. You know, all of a sudden you'll get a spicy smell or spicy scent. And then there's some sort of like blood and fire ritual that comes with that. They don't understand what they're doing as much as anybody else. I mean, even the situation with, I see now I could go off on a tangent. Let me see. Keep going.
We love tangents.
And it happened, that things like that happen on all sorts of levels. And that's a sign of extremism. And once you start to realize what these signs of extremism are, that's generally when you say, okay, you can start to identify and say, okay, that's false.
Mm-hmm. If Tyrion's the POV, at least.
Yeah. Right.
He calls it out from about a mile away. Usually.
Yes. Yeah. He's like, I don't know about that. So, yeah, he's our little magic mushroom. So he's.
Yes. It's like, wait, this is a magnifying glass.
Yeah.
But it's clear.
Like, even at the Red Wedding, you know, that was the phrase in Walder, especially, is sort of like an other of the Riverlands. And you have Tywin, who's a bit of a Targaryen, who is a fiery, simple person.
Love it. That's a great way to describe them.
even if it's not like straight up magic, you have Sybil Spicer that's kind of that's manipulating the situation. So you still have the spice and then the fire and then a blood ritual type of thing.
Whoa, you're going deep on me right now. Damn. you're like, remember the spice?
Yeah.
The spicer. Like,
yeah.
Wait a second.
So it's like you start to find things like that. And again, it even happens in his old stories too. And
it adds clarity then, because it's something that you would potentially not pick up on when we're reading right. The Song of Ice and Fire, even overseeing these patterns.
Right.
But when you see some patterns in here, and there's a couple phrases, like in the glass flower, there was a couple phrases that I highlighted that I feel like were lifted straight from A Song of Ice and Fire, like mm-hmm. sentences that are used again somewhere yeah. along the way. And so it jumps out more when you're seeing it in a different context.
Like even in Song for Laia, there's spicy meat sticks that they have to eat, and it affects some, and it doesn't affect others, or at least not the way that they want it to. So you have these like red priest
analogs,
yes, that are serving people spicy stuff, and then their next step is to bring them in to meet this fiery, what's the Grishka, the mother Grishka, you know, this fiery blob god thing that's like under the hill or under a mountain, that's kind of like an analog for a volcano, which goes back to your fire gods and ice and fire. So it's like you can, once you see that pattern, and it does take a few stories to read, you know, to really, it really starts to like stick out to you without
I can relate. It's like when I'm listening to my favorite bands
mm-hmm.
and I'm uncovering all the different things that they put in these songs, not necessarily like hidden messages, but mm-hmm. different sounds and different manipulations of sonic character that becomes like their trademark over time. And it's part of the complexity that created the harmonic like goodness that I wanted to get into in the first place.
Yeah.
And so what you're talking about and what you've been blogging about is all of the scaffolding between mm-hmm. George's stories that he has decided is part of whatever truth that he's imbuing into these stories
yeah.
that makes it real. Through these details and through these decisions that he's been making. And I think that is so cool to be able to like sort of find the architect's plans almost in a way mm-hmm. and to not necessarily reverse engineer, but like you said, draw like confidence in the rest of the story based on how much work he has put into everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a really important fact for everyone to hear, or to at least understand if you're a big fan of A Song of Ice and Fire. I think that a lot of sentiment about the story has taken a downward swing among the mass culture, which I don't know how much that matters to everyone, but at least the taste in your mouth about the scale of work that he's doing
mm-hmm.
has turned a lot to his like speed and his efficiency in writing itself. And I know that that's not going to be the narrative in the future if he does finish, mm-hmm. but just knowing how much this is not just, he's not just an author who's writing these books because he wants to write A Song of Ice and Fire. Like,
right.
He's clearly obsessed with the craft and of making these things universally sound in a way that is satisfying to his whole body of work. And so just like be confident about it and mm-hmm. have fun with the stuff that's coming. And like you've been doing, have fun with the stuff that's out there. That's so neat that we have that to draw from. That's so cool. Like,
yeah.
I don't have anyone, any other author that I know about that I can do that with other than like Tolkien.
Yeah. You know,
he's,
yeah.
He's got the same sort of thing going on, but it's so specific to the same universe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And with George R. R. Martin, this is where it gets exciting. It's not, but it might be. It's not in the same universe, but mm-hmm. it might be.
Because there are some overlap.
Well, not only overlap, but potentially Planetos could be part of those thousand worlds. It could be in the same universe. It could be in the same galaxy. It could be separated. Leech is giving me a weird look right now, so I might be totally wrong. This is my wishful thinking. This is my wishful thinking that the still angels will descend upon Euron's fleet like, in the winds of
you're
winter.
You're trying to like take yourself through that tempter's veil from one side of the galaxy to the other.
I'm chaos. I'm chaos incarnate right now. I will drink both fire and ice.
Well... All right. Since you mentioned that, I don't think Ice and Fire really is going, is at all part of his Thousand Worlds universe. No.
What about Bacalon?
I know. He added not just Bacalon, but Sejal to Fire and Blood. And I am not kidding when I tell you that I about fell out of my chair. Like some ridiculous meme when I saw that in the book and read it. And I was...
You like hit an alarm that's in your book room.
You're like, all this is working.
I'm like, what? This is insane. And the way that he put them in there, you know, it wasn't, he didn't even rewrite them as, you mm-hmm. know.
That's what I'm saying.
I know. He didn't even rewrite them all of a sudden, you know, like they're the good guys. No, it's, they're still in there, some sort of deist thing that the Targaryens or the fire symbol people that they worship. And I was like, huh. Well, okay then. And
so what do you think about that?
I don't think it's
okay,
part it's, of that, but I think
I don't know why I'm interrupting you. I want to hear the whole thing. I don't know.
This is probably more exciting to me than anybody else. The big anchor detail behind Thousand Worlds is the Interregnum. It was the big double war.
Okay.
Between these two factions, the humans were caught in the middle, and so we have a Dance of Dragons going on. We have the humans caught in the middle, which are the Terrans, the little people, the small folk, you know, the ones we're supposed to sympathize most with. And nothing starts to happen again until after the Interregnum. And that thing that helps people start to slowly recover is... Space flight is brought back to that technology is brought back to the universe, the galaxy. And what does Blood Raven tell Bran?
You'll
fly.
Oh.
So you're never going to walk again. You're going to fly. So it's a type. So Ice and Fire, at this point, we're going from the second act into the third. And that's when we're going to see all of this stuff. That people of characters and everybody has learned is really going to start flowing. And it's a type of evolution as far as much as you can have, you know, in a story. It's a type of evolution. We're going to have a condensing of not just, you know, quote, magic, like green seeing and stuff like that, but also the science part of it. And that's something I've been yammering about for a long time, why Bran specifically had to have Maester Luwin teach him these things that are not quite wrong, but they're also not quite right. Like the Children of the Forest don't exist, but they mm-hmm. used to. No, they still do. You know, Green Seeing doesn't really exist, or Green Dream. Yeah, it does, but people have forgotten that. So Bran had to transition so he can come back onto page as, you know, having both branches. And that's going to be the after Interregnum.
how was space flight reintroduced after that for those other stories?
I
was
don't
it time
Yeah, it was time. People had to rediscover.
Rebuild, this, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, like they had to rebuild and they had to rediscover in this technology. Mm. So I don't think anything in Ice and Fire is like secret tech or part of Thousand Worlds, but right. I think George is pulling that. That's one of the many concepts right. that he's pulling from the way he wants to tell it. And so...
There are some truthers that think that there might be, like, for example, like the Valyrian High Road, mm-hmm. that kind of technology. Like, there might be actual hidden tech from other parts of the universe. What do you think about that?
I'm not going to ever tell anybody that they're wrong. George is the only one that knows the answers to this stuff. So if I disagree, it's not because I think I have any secret knowledge or not, but I disagree.
You just have every book of his signed.
All of them, actually. And... Sometimes it's hard for me to say this and not sound like I'm trying to be...
Like elitist about your knowledge?
Or just about, yeah, like anything like
that. This is a safe
space. This is a safe space.
You see my toes are all turned in towards each other now. It's like, oops. Well, again, it's because after you read these stories, you start to see this pattern. And it's like, well, this has to happen first. Mm-hmm. And... that's the way it does it. That seems to be the way it naturally occurs to him or in his world. And I think that's the closest we can get to that is like asphalt. I think of it as asphalt.
Right.
Of
course.
But also when you read.
With the glass candle. Sorry.
Well, when you read the glass flower, you know, she's kind of. It's a combination of magic, so to speak, because of well, no, this is very low tech that seems like it's magic, but it's tech in the making. Tech is probably even too strong.
Are we talking about the flower? The roads,
back to the roads.
Oh, okay. It's like crude. It's like kind of Bronze Age. It's like
yes.
Elemental, like tin and copper.
Yes. Oh God, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this right now. Roads are not always necessarily good in Martin world because that has to do with expansionism, and that has to sometimes do with going into like indigenous areas, and this usually comes from a type of dragon element. And there are two types of dragons in his world, not just there's the fire dragon, which is more like governmental control. And then there's like an ice dragon, which tends to be more of a like a corporate overreach control.
Interesting.
And you see a lot of that in Override, too. Anyway. So the roads that he talked about in the histories is actually more foreshadowing of what's to come. We're going to have Dany coming down, Rhaetyrion coming down, using those roads, using that demon road. So it's more foreshadowing for that.
You think so?
I think
they're going to use the roads?
Yeah, I think they are. Tyrion was super obsessed with them.
Mm-hmm.
And just like he's super obsessed with dragons and, you know... And this is one of the wonders of the world. And it's kind of like George says, you know, you don't hang a pack of dire wolves on the wall and not use them at some point. Mm-hmm. So
That old phrase.
And that's more for foreshadowing. I don't think that has anything to do yet with actual technology that's coming up.
Okay.
But back to Glass Flower really quickly, if you read about Cyrene's castle and stuff, that's essentially Valyrian architecture. That's also like Dragonstone. So it's a combination of two. So really, sometimes I think it's just a way that he keeps himself organized mm-hmm. with so many details, so many worlds. That's another way he's bringing Cyrene in as, you know, a prototype to that he used for Dany.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think
almost down to like the description of how she looks at some
points.
Holy
crap. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I know. That was another one when I read it. It was like, wow, holy shit.
can I pee?
Yeah, please go pee. We've had a lot of diet soda.
It's okay. I'm probably rambling and not making any sense.
Oh, absolutely not.
And that's why I was like, do I pee on myself or?
Yeah, just pee on yourself.
Oh, that's one of my notes here is
pee on yourself.
Pee on self.
There we go. Highlight it.
One of the thoughts I had on that, and I see that's why I wrote notes down. I didn't even read it. that there is only one science, and it's the law of nature.
Right. Okay.
So
that's like the deeper truth, though, right?
Yeah.
But it's like part of the scaffolding that we were talking about with all of it.
Uh-huh.
And so if we're talking about the way that you sort of simplified that potential woo-ness of the stories being physically connected, not just actually connected because they're written by the same person. Mm-hmm. So they're psychically connected.
Yes.
Because
yes.
They're written by his brain.
Exactly.
And so they're being culled together. And a lot of times, like you said, the architecture, the people, it all sort of manifests in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it doesn't have to be physically in the same universe with each other.
Right.
So some people are reading that or seeing the clues and they're sort of crackpotting. Wouldn't this be cool if?
Yes. Yeah.
And that's pretty fascinating to me
on
both sides.
Yeah. And I joke too, you know, I've joked before, you know, when people have asked online, you know, well, what's the real, what do you think George is going to reveal the, you know, true name of Planetos? Like right. What's, and I'm like, Avalon.
Really, Avalon?
Well, that's the last story that he was writing.
Okay.
That he put down. He wrote The Glass Flower. He started Avalon. He put Avalon down. I think he was doing some other, like, TV work or something in between. But he put Avalon down to start Ice and Fire, because that's when the images of Bran and the direwolves and such popped into his head. So I always joke that Avalon is his last, is the name of Planetos, because that's the last in 1,000 worlds that was supposed to be.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I don't think we have any real tech yet. I think we're going to be set up with being able to foresee it coming on.
Okay.
Because I think there's going to be a lot of unity between the two sides of things that have always clashed, like between the science and between the magic, between faith in nature and faith with religion,
right.
You know, things like that. Even Sansa and Arya coming, you know, the two sisters coming back together.
What would you say that they hold, like that they represent within that?
Sansa and Arya?
Yeah. Like prowess, like skill, growth?
I think at the most basic level, it's the importance of family. Because if you look at the way the Stark family and other family, predominant families, you know, are contrasted. Ned was the one always inviting people into the castle, and he would sit with the small folk and he would talk with his daughters and get, you know, swords practice with them and stuff like that. He would let Bran climb the tree and say, don't tell your mom. Where the Stark kids always think of Winterfell as their safe place, their home. And I think Ned even says something like, I think it's Ned. It's either Ned or John. They say all roads lead to the same castle. Yeah. What are you saying?
Me, all roads lead to Winterfell.
Well, that castle is going to be Winterfell. So they are, you know, going to regroup. Whereas, like, Tywin raised his kids to be much more grasping. It's much more about power. Mm-hmm. You know, it's they want Casterly Rock because it's a seat of power. It's power, power, golden power, and golden power. And they're always bickering with each other. Mm-hmm. So, or Tywin's trying to control them, where it's like complete opposite. So I think because within each plot, in each branching subplot and stuff like that, you always have like this conflict. You can't have a family that's always so perfect with each other. That's like gag worthy.
Yeah, you know,
that's not realistic.
That's not realistic at all. And I think he said something about picking Arya and Sansa's names that sounded opposite because it's going to be more of a, you know, a cheerful moment when they do come back together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
we're not going to have names that are already satisfying from the beginning.
Yes.
They fit so well together.
Yeah.
So if George's, when you were in the bathroom, we were talking about.
I'm so sorry. I was going to die.
Sometimes you got to go. We were talking
better about. Better in there than out here.
We could just talk about bathroom jokes the whole time if you guys want. George loves that. Anyway, we're talking about how they mightn't be physically connected. Because some people like to crackpot that the stories could be physically connected.
Like you were just trying to do exactly. 3 minutes ago?
I didn't say that was my opinion. It is a opinion. It's a fun one. It's definitely a fun one, especially with space travel being a thing. Because it's like someone may land here and throw a whole wrench in this thing. It wouldn't be great if everything took a crazy turn in the seventh book. Like, wouldn't that be absolutely wild? No. I'm not necessarily saying that, but they are mentally connected.
Yeah.
Like psychically connected because he wrote them.
Yes.
They were brought in from his brain, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So if we're connecting all these things together and we're looking for patterns and we're seeing patterns and the patterns through collective, like they're all stacking up on top of each other and we're able to go, based on all of that, then this, which mm-hmm. is how realization is born from study or how the emotion is born from a song. It's all those patterns built, and then now we have it, right? So we're seeing it. So what is he trying to tell us the truth about? Like, what have we narrowed it down to? And so if I'm just going to go off the top of my head here, I'm thinking obviously religion, mm-hmm. Which probably could come down to some sort of belief. And you said choice earlier.
Yes.
Which is
a big one.
I think it's the crux of probably all of this. The choice of ice and fire. The choice of ice and fire. Which one will it be?
Yeah.
but also I feel like he's struggling with, not necessarily struggling, but he's exploring. It's like we said earlier, like he isn't there yet. Like the magic thing. Like mm-hmm. He hasn't quite landed on how he feels yet. And we're still, I think that's part of the reason why these books are taking a little bit. It's like, I'm going to let the world play out a little bit more and see if this is a simulation or not or whatever. That looks like really useful to use right now. Yeah, actually I do. I'll take that.
Would you like some?
You want to share a lip balm? It seems like we're not quite, we haven't arrived to the answer. And so, like I said, we've got choice, religion. Go ahead. Do you want to interrupt me? Go ahead.
Yes.
Hannah raised her hand. Yes, please.
We haven't arrived at the answer, but I'm going to argue that we may never arrive at the answer because looking at the way so many of these novellas end with so much of these gray area questions, like again, back to like both of, well, I only read two of them specifically for this, even though there's many of them that we said we were going to read. I only read two of them. Anyway, now that that's out of the bag.
She's like, that's been weighing on me the whole time.
But you look at Song for Laia, you look at the Glass Rose, like both of those end with a lot of
flower.
Oh, is it a glass flower?
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
I pictured it's
a rose by any other
it's
name.
It's Valentine's Day. Come on. It's right. Both of those end with really broad and ambiguous questions about relationship dynamics and about religion, like we're saying. But so I'm saying, and George R. Martin has said over and over again with the ending of A Song of Ice and Fire that
bittersweet.
It's going to be bittersweet and it may be unsatisfactory in some sort of way. And so I think that the point to a lot of this is that there are no answers to some of those different questions.
Right.
So he may not have them now or ever, because I think that part of the point is to ask.
Okay.
Ask instead of answer.
I think we're going to see a large portion of that. I definitely think he's going to leave many things open. I think the closest answer we're going to get is like in the story.
John's parentage.
Sorry. Oh, my lordy.
R plus L.
The whole, oh my goodness, what a crazy craziness that is. And I think I have a feeling we're going to see an ending, or at least half of the ending is going to be like the ending of For a Single Yesterday, and where we're going to see the seeds of things, that there is going to be a bittersweet moment that is going to...
John killing Danny.
Oh.
2K30.
Bittersweet moment. Let's just call it that. And but that we're going to see the seeds of change. But what those particular seeds are going to be like up in the air a little bit. We know it's going to happen because there's going to be lots of things that are going to start merging at that point. Okay. I mean, the whole point isn't for everything to go back to normal the way that it started. Mm-hmm. That's
compression and then product, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's what's going to happen.
Yes. Yes. So, and I think he's even said before, you know, all of this is going to converge. All of this is going to come together. And so I think that's going to happen on many levels. Like, between the magic and the science, for instance, like I mentioned, Sansa and Arya, all of that's going to come back together. Yeah, then we're going to get this product, and we're going to have like these seeds of change, and that's, you know, that's going to start the after interregnum, the flight again. Mm. I think he's always had it in his mind, and this is something I used to yammer on again about is that. Bran was it from the beginning.
King Bran from the beginning, right?
What?
King Bran from the beginning, all the hints from the first chapter, first POV, and continued. Well,
yeah, I mean, one of the first things we see is, you know, a king's judgment. Like I don't even think he's going to be king. I think there's going to be a lot of things that are going to change because I don't think this is going to just stay a feudal society again.
Right.
Same. There's no evolution in the story if you do that. Mm-hmm. You know, if you just start one way and end the same way and there's nothing, you know, I think that's one of the things that's going to change is the structure. So I don't think it's going to be a surprise the way we were shown.
missing for the whole season and then the most important character.
Y'all take it easy shots right now.
Oh, whatever. It's an easy shot, but it's funny.
You mean that episode where Bran sat outside of Winterfell in his wheelchair the whole episode on one spot?
I'm talking about all of season 5 where he wasn't even there.
I was studying Beyond the Wall.
Yeah, that was even, oh my goodness.
Look, if Bran is going to be like the end game guy,
you can't leave him off of screen for an entire season.
And I think that, like, book wise, if we're going to talk about Bran being the end game guy, I don't like it. But,
interesting.
But whatever. How do we start talking about this? It doesn't matter. I don't want to show my cards.
You were shutting me down because I was trying to explore some things, and you were like, "It doesn't matter if the explanation."
Oh yeah, that's right. I'm so sorry.
Doesn't matter because we're not going to get the answer.
That was so mean of me. But I think that's...
You're like, and then.
But, and yet.
Yeah.
This is my question. Okay, so this is like, we're talking about Bran.
Mm-hmm.
Because we talk a lot of, like, you talk a lot about Bran in your blog. I'm pivoting, sort of. Not really.
I can always come back.
What were you trying to say?
I'm curious about the things that we're... Like, the point of why we're here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what are we getting to?
Yeah.
Like, not just...
On the Earth?
In A Song of Ice, on Planetos, on Avalon, is what I'll call it, at least for the rest of the day. You were also in the bathroom for that. We're going to call Planetos Avalon for a little bit.
I was peeing for a long time. My bladder was really full. I wasn't even, like, hanging out. I was really trying to go fast.
We have what are the reasons why we're here? Not just the resolution of the plot lines that from the characters that we've met. Not just exploring because as we've stated in this episode, there's a deeper scaffolding. It's not just telling a story. It's the story with all these other associations and cues that are literally in the fibers before the. It's like they're the fungal bodies before the humans get sprouted. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
Like all those original ancient like life forms that bore the story that where Planetos is crafted inside the mind of George, like all of that is going to need to also reach its conclusion or at least be exercised within the beats of the story. And so knowing that, we've gone through 5 books now and we're moving closer to a finish. And okay, I agree with you. We won't know the secret of the universe from the end of Game of Thrones. And we won't know it from the end of A Song of Ice and Fire either. And yeah, it is totally okay. But what things does George R. R. Martin believe is worth taking to the end of the universe? Like what does this person, with all this insight and patience of crafting this story, like, what is he allowing his story to be expressed through? And when we were talking about it, like, the things that I'm pulling out of my mind is like, it's like he hasn't made up his mind about like what the right thing to do in with love is, or with magic, or with religion, like whether or not faith is a waste of time, like, or whether the power that it gives you is worthwhile mm-hmm. for the potential cloudiness that you may have in your life while you're here, or like whether having an approach like Arya does, like she's literally within the House of Black and Whites, surrounded by all of these mm-hmm. potential deities, and yet she has the weight of the world on her shoulders. Mm-hmm. Like all of these truths that we're expressing, or that we're having be expressed through these characters. I know that we haven't gotten to book 6 and 7 yet, so some of them aren't necessarily clear yet. And I'm wondering, it's open to both of you, like what things do you think that we've shorted down to? Because we were talking about magic in mm-hmm. a very sort of potentially mysterious way, like he isn't there yet. What other sorts of things has he gotten to or not gotten to that is going to, like, why are we here? You know, like, mm-hmm. what is A Song of Ice and Fire coming to, essentially, is what I'm asking.
I sort of have an answer to that question. And at least in one piece is, I think, a very deep, strong sense of self. As we look in some of these novellas that we've read, the Glass Flower one, a lot of it is confusing. But then there's also a lot about remembering who you are in order to make it through, like through XYZ thing. Right? Yeah. And then I'm getting both of the stories mixed up because I don't know them well enough. But just these ideas of like holding on to yourself as an individual and I wrote it down somewhere.
That I definitely agree with. And I think we see that struggle with people like Jamie. Mm-hmm. You know, the identity crisis, you know, they're going to flip back and forth.
Or like Theon, that's what saves yes. him, essentially. Or Arya, that's what keeps her so deeply rooted in herself. I saw that theme a little bit weaved through some of these stories. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was one of those things of this is a truth that we can pull out and say.
What's that called exactly? It's like, what's a fast way to say that?
Like a strong sense of identity. Like a strong, I would probably say identity to who you are innately. Mm-hmm. Whether it's your family name or, you know, true to your, that's one of the truths I think we could pull from some of these extracurricular
check out
readings.
With you too.
Yeah, I think we definitely see that happening so far. So it's not going to be like this huge surprise.
Yeah,
it's been built up rather well. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a bunch of like fist pumping moments. You know, like woo, you know, yay, they did it. And
satisfying when someone that we know who they are realizes who they are.
Exactly.
And they're like, this is who I am.
Exactly.
For better or for worse.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But I also think I'm remembering this past fall, George was in Chicago for a few different awards and talks and such. And I was listening to one of his interviews, and he mentioned that one of the important things that he feels are missing from sci-fi and fantasy now, the trend has moved away to something that's a little bit darker. And despite what we think of his work, he's not dark. Mm-hmm. What he feels like is missing from a lot of these works now is hope, like hope for the future, mm-hmm. Which is what made me think of For a Single Yesterday, because at the end of that story, there's a rebuilding of hope. And that's a good story to read. There's a lot of John and Bran leadership issues in that story. And it's not a terribly long story. And then even actually, in my opinion, even in The Glass Flower, because once Cyrene, without too many spoilers, gets her the result she's looking for, and there's a switch in who controls the table. Mm-hmm. She keeps saying, you're going to get basically nature that's growing back. You're going to get trees and swamps and bugs and all this stuff, and it's going to be really annoying. And the so-called chloronymous is like, yeah, but you know what? It's going to be warmth and it's going to be life. Mm-hmm. So
It's like real.
Yes, it's real. So it's going back to nature, and it's taken away these extremes. I don't know if it's going to happen again in 10,000 years, but you know, it's for right now, it's taken away these extremes to allow things to go back to nature for regrowth. Even in Fever Dream, when the ship Fever Dream is taken over by the Black Dragon, and is changed name and it's changed coloring to black and red, and then becomes the Ozymandias, which George is likened to the throne. Mm-hmm. Even that, at one point, let me see if I can say this without too many spoilers. Even that goes back to nature.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then that's when things can progress. So I think it's going to take away a lot of the two extremes that we have going on, the two extreme fire dragon, extreme ice dragon, and it's going to pave the way for hope.
Like strip it down to its core and show like a light at the end of the tunnel,
yes, kind
of
thing. Yeah, like a balance. Like there's never not going to be something bad that happens.
Right.
But it's not going to be such an extreme. It's going to be...
It won't be by the hand of one specific motherfucker.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There's
hell-bent on holding this much power.
Right.
Maybe they'll meet another person like them or people like them.
And yeah. You know, the Daemon Julian's going to be gone. You know, the Siren, you know, that sort of is in denial about keeping slaves,
yeah,
is right. Gone. things like that are mm-hmm. gone. So, yeah, you're going to have the biting bugs, but that's just part of nature. That's a very minor thing compared to, you know, the two extremes we have.
What would you say is most likely natural, let's just say, in A Song of Ice and Fire? For so long, it's been the winter to me, but that's not how you see it, right?
No, I think, and again, they're not going to like wake up one day and be like, oh, you know, everything's back to normal. Seasons are going to probably go back to normal if they ever were normal before. We're not going to have the extremes of, you know, decades long or however long, you know, deep winters where everybody is born and dies mm-hmm. without ever seeing the sunlight. Mm-hmm. Just like we're never going to have the summer that never ends. So it's part of the dichotomy of the two dragons that we're fighting in this story is the never-ending summer or the never-ending winter. Mm-hmm. So things are going to go back to more of a cyclical nature. So, I think George is pulling a lot of this from Roger Zelazny's story, Lord of Light, because he's mentioned that story before in quite a few interviews, and they were like best buddies and stuff like that. And it's going to be
probably talking through ideas and sharing,
sharing thoughts, sharing whatever. And the, you know, basically the big takeaway from that story as well is the gods or so-called gods are going to be normalized. You know, it's, and I think this goes with a lot of the socio-political restructuring that's going to happen. Is a lot of this is going to be like normalized. I'm trying to think.
Bran becoming Blood Raven, all that kind of, like Bran, this kid that we mm-hmm. know. Becoming the most powerful player in the game with the ability mm-hmm. to manipulate space and time. Yikes. You know, that kind of falls into that normalization theme of gods becoming normal.
Yes, because the way it seems to me is the only reason why Bloodraven is his age that he is now is because he had to wait for Bran to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, if Bran showed up 50 years ago, then we'd have a different story. But it didn't happen then. It happened now. And then that's why. Mm-hmm. I don't think Bran's going to be stuck in a tree like that. He's not going to have to preserve himself or do whatever. That's part of the normalization of the gods. You know, he's not going to live 125 years. Yeah, Bran will live not in a tree and will live a normal human lifespan and then die. And there might be another Greenseer or not. I mean, he's right now Blood Raven's the last Green Seer, but I think that's because Bran is now going to be the last. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Does that make sense?
Right, right.
So just like I think it was like Rhaegar was supposed to be the last dragon, but now Dany's going to be the last dragon. Mm-hmm. So it's because those two are the two magical parallels.
Do you think it'll like the planet will find its peace? Like it seems to have not found through if Rhaegar was supposed to be the last dragon, mm-hmm. and Brendan Rivers was supposed to be the guy, mm-hmm. and it stopped there. Then why this now? Like, do you think it'll be satisfied at the end of the seventh books? Like,
I do. To me, it seems like the title of this, you know, the whole series is showing us this. It's a song of ice and fire. So it's a battle of ice and then a battle of fire. You need to get rid of those extremes to get back to normal. The question that comes up a lot is like, what do you think Rhaegar was going to do? You know, because he said to Jaime, when I get back, we're going to have to make some changes. If you want, in my opinion, my weirdo opinion, if you want to get a very strong idea of what those changes would be, reading Dying of the Light gives us a strong idea of that. It's the near exact same thing happens. He's like, look, this way of the High Cavalans and stuff like that has been going on, but we need a change. And the dude marries a girl that's kind of like Lyanna, and he even has a John Connington and stuff like that. So you have this triad of the same type of people again, and then there's a change that's going to happen. And I think Rhaegar was definitely going for like more of a societal change. Mm-hmm. And I think for Dany and her little triad of people, she struggles between what type of Targaryen she wants to be. She mm-hmm. she often talks about Viserys and Rhaegar and within like the same paragraph. Unfortunately, I don't think she's going to pick the right.
Yeah.
I don't think she's going to pick the right type of Targaryen mm-hmm. to, you know, model herself after.
Yikes. Sad news.
Yeah.
I like it.
Dany stands.
I guess, but I think that's interesting.
It'll be, I mean, like, how do you go through that meat grinder that she's been going through in the books with such, like, gristle reality, not, like, sweeping sonnets behind the action in the background? Like, how do you go through that and not come out, like, with sharp edges?
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah. So, just like the Iron Throne.
Is, right, you know. Exactly.
Well, I think about with the glass flower, mm-hmm. there's so many Daenerys parallels that you draw out from that, like yes. you were saying a little bit earlier,
yeah.
everything down to the way folks look. But mm-hmm. a big piece of that story is Sansa's apostles that are around
yeah.
her,
yeah.
that are guiding her or sucking up to her or telling her,
yes, yeah.
influencing her in some sort of way. And as we've had lots of conversations about Daenerys and the folks that are influencing her to make decisions for better or for worse, we draw some parallels to Daario in this glass flower. You did a little bit of discussion there, which we can talk about, but I think a lot of the folks that are going to be surrounding her, as we see here, are the people who are going to influence her to flip one way or another, mm-hmm. which I think makes Tyrion's role and him as a character so interesting when he's going to be interacting with her. Mm-hmm. But there's this character, Carr Dorian, mm-hmm. in who is a big influence, who we can put a lot of his relationship, it looks a lot like the Dany-Daario relationship mm-hmm. in A Song of Ice and Fire. But for him, it's in The Glass Flower, it's a little bit more explicit that he's there for his own
yes.
motives. Yeah. And for he has grander things story. In mind. Mm. Yeah.
Get it out of the way quickly.
He has grander.
Right, right.
But I thought I'm going to read this quote because I thought it was interesting. And then I want to ask what you think this says about either Daario in the future or the future of folks surrounding Daenerys.
Yeah, yeah.
Describing Carr Dorian, it says, the rest of them want something of me. When they get it, they'll be gone. Carr got his desire a long time ago, and he still comes back and back and back and back to my world and my bed. It is not love of me that brings him back, nor the beauty of the young body I wear, nor anything as simple as the riches he earns. He has grander things in mind.
Mm-hmm.
we could almost explicitly say that about Dario and, mm-hmm. and Daenerys. So what do you think potentially about what that could mean for Dario specifically or other folks that are surrounding,
well,
influencing her?
One thing I did not include in there, and I know we were joking about crackpot and such earlier.
Always.
I know. You know what? I actually love crackpot. I love really good crackpot.
You want some water?
Yeah. Oh, I'm good, yeah. I love really good crackpot.
Of course,
you
yes.
know, it's fun, and sometimes every once in a while you're like, oh, wait a minute, you know, maybe there could be something to, or not.
Of course.
There's no harm in exploring the text. And but there is somebody that was on the forum. I haven't seen her in a while. Lady Blizzardborn, she has this theory that Dario is actually possibly Blackfyre related. I know there's like Blackfyre theories all over the place, and I absolutely adore them because I love the Blackfyre angle of the story. It's okay. one of my favorite subplots that George threw in there. And at first I was like, this is crazy. But then she kept going and going and going and going. So I don't know if it's exactly that, but I think Dario has something. He definitely has ambitions mm-hmm. that yeah. are kingly-like. Like, he wants that power. He wants the power that Dany has. And I think he is totally physically attracted to her and all this other stuff. I don't know that Dany is – did Dany leave him in charge of in the show? I didn't see
Leave him in charge of what exactly?
I don't know. Did he leave her? Did she leave him in charge of something?
He has power.
He is
in a small way.
He took the head off of. He did the same thing. He became leader of the Second Sons, and then kind of followed around, and then was trying to hit on her too aggressively, and then she's like, "No, none of that." And then eventually it worked, mm-hmm. and then Barristan's like, "I don't know about this guy," mm-hmm. and then he goes and looks for Dany with Jorah.
Okay.
I think at one point he might have left at some point, you know, like he does in the books, but
yeah, I don't know how it went down the show, so I don't have that to compare to. Dario. Yeah.
The squad. Yeah.
That was
Did you not watch all of the show?
No.
Whoa.
that's a whole combo.
Holy crap, really? Where'd you stop?
Season 5?
Dude, this is that's wild.
Wow. There's wow. I know.
I don't watch the this is confession that you didn't ask for.
Yeah.
The Cormoran Strike books that J.K. Rowling wrote.
Mm-hmm.
I don't those adaptations.
You're missing out. I would have stopped at season 5 of
Sorry.
I would have stopped at season 5 had we not had a conversation about.
Were you going to stop then?
Which is the season that Bran first met Bloodraven?
Season 4.
4?
Episode 10.
Okay. And which is the season he was off screen for the
5?
5?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I'd watched that one.
Yeah.
Or maybe I stopped halfway through that one. Mm-hmm. I can't remember anymore.
Halfway through is about the right stop.
Yeah. To me, that seems real. That seems correct. Because I think everybody was kind of going through it through season 5.
Well, just a few days ago, I saw. Like, I've seen some still shots, and I've seen some short clips of when Jon first met Dany
mm-hmm.
on Dragonstone.
This is so funny to me that you're talking about it like this. Go
I
on.
I love it.
I love it.
And I never saw that. So I only saw, like, little snippets mm-hmm. or pictures or something. I watched that whole scene, and I...
So you watched the scene.
I watched the whole scene, and I
do you see the cave?
No,
oh, no,
probably
no, you're
not.
Talking about the throne. Never
yeah.
mind. Never
yeah,
mind.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
sorry, sorry, sorry. I'll tell you about the cave later.
No.
I can tell you about the cave now if you want. No.
Well, I asked. I'm like, wait a minute. Who did the set direction and
just
stuff
watch
on there?
It. Okay, you didn't like the set direction in Dragonstone?
Or no.
You liked it? You liked
it. It was crazy because I – and then listening to the dialogue and he calls
right.
– Do you see my head tilt right now? Like John – in so many words, calls Dany a child, and she's sitting up there on the apex of this throne in this angled walled obsidian looking castle. I'm like, holy shit, that's like Cyrene stuff mm-hmm. right there.
That's yeah.
I mean, I was like,
it looks almost exactly the same as I was picturing it in.
And that was the first time I had seen that, and I was mm-hmm. like, notes. Who did this? You know, yeah. And that was crazy to me. So
you think that they went in? Sorry, Hannah. You think that
I have no idea.
You think that they might have went in and culled from that story?
It's just really the way that
it was probably coincidence.
Seven stuff?
Probably.
It was probably coincidence because of where they were filming or something like that. But
what an obvious place to draw from if you need be, though.
It was really cool. It's really cool. I hadn't really thought about that until I was reading.
That's what you thought?
Rereading this.
That was the first thing that came to my mind was seeing that. And I there was an honest question, you know, is do we know if these are any notes George gave, you know, years ago?
Right.
That they're working towards.
Right.
Something like that. Like, Danny's throne room should look like this.
Oh, right.
Type of thing.
I don't think that happened.
Okay. I don't think so. Yeah.
And
that's
perfectly fine. I was just like, holy crap.
I doubt that he even gave them specifics along the lines of they meet at Dragonstone, right?
Right.
I think that was a showism specifically.
Yeah, I do. So, yes, 100%.
So this is my question, because obviously we are fans of both the show and the TV series and all their flaws in both things. Is there no curiosity to kind of dive into?
You want
to
hang out tonight?
Because there's so, the show brings so much hype surrounding it in just culturally. Mm-hmm. And being like the Song of Ice and Fire girl in your circle, as I am, there's like and I hate to say it, but it's just the reality. There's like a smugness almost of like, well, if only you knew, like, I'm really fun to hang out with. If only you knew, like, the reality. Like, is there, there's just no, are you curious about the show?
I'll answer for you. Hannah, she is very satisfied at being this elitist over us.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. Right. She's very cool, don't you know?
Don't you see my floating pillow that I'm sitting on right now? I am elevating here.
I'm intimidated.
No. I am totally fine. I mean, from what I've read and seen and heard and everything, both George and the showrunners have been saying for a long time that it's, at this point, it's
absolutely,
it's two different stories.
Absolutely.
They might be hitting on a few beats. George might tell them like a few end results, but like things along the way are so different.
Absolutely.
And that's fine with me. That's, you know, the show started to not make sense within its own world for me. And that's what sort of turned me off. That's really specifically what turned me off. Not that it wasn't mirroring the books exactly, but it started to not make sense within its own world to me. And I did. I stuck with it for as long as I could. But then I noticed that, you know, it completely slipped out of my mind to make it this weekly event to sit and watch.
That's when you know.
And that's, all of a sudden I was like, holy shit, I haven't watched that show in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Damn,
what the hell?
Damn.
Happened to see Bachelor this season.
And
did it really?
Yeah, that's a different discussion.
Probably for the best, honestly. Do you watch The Bachelor or Bachelorette?
No.
I just watch it through osmosis, though.
I only just watched the Baby Yoda show, like, last week.
I haven't seen that yet, so was it good?
It was good. There were there were changes to the structure and background of the Mandalorians, which if nobody knows, it's perfectly fine. It's 100% fine.
This. Going deep Star Wars lore right now.
and I'm not even that up to date with like more of the modern Star Wars stuff, but it's perfectly fine. It makes sense. There were a few changes. I was like, huh. But it was great. I loved it. All of the CGI and the costumes and the locations and everything was. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Better than Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
she wouldn't know because she's never watched Game of Thrones.
That's true. Whoa. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. All right. A couple just weird lightning round questions, and then we'll get back to what we were talking about. Oberyn, did you like Oberyn? Their depiction of Oberyn Martell in the books or in the show at least.
Please,
you can
just
say yes or no.
In Mandalorian?
No. Game of Thrones.
And
is there an Oberyn in Mandalorian?
Isn't that?
I've never seen one minute of Star Wars.
Okay.
Isn't it the same act? I thought it was.
He's probably in Mandalorian.
Okay.
Actually.
All right.
I don't know that. I haven't seen it yet. Way to spoil me.
get out. Oh God, I'm thinking back to that now.
Pedro Pascal.
Yeah.
He goes, tell your father I'm here. And tell your father that the Lannisters are not the only ones who pay their debts.
Yes. Oh, my lordy.
Tell your father.
It was definitely much more campy. He was...
Hannah's computer screens. That guy.
Yeah.
We do not hurt little girls in Dorne.
Yeah. That was so much more campy and like the...
What about that mountain punch-up, though? They got literally the strongest man in the world to play the mountain. What'd you think about that? I mean, come on!
I'm gonna go through each character.
Okay. Well, I mean... That makes sense to me.
Yes.
Did it not to you?
It made sense to me, too, yes. It made lots of sense.
Why did they... I liked the first mountain the best, though.
I liked him, too, you know? I liked him just fine.
I think he was the best.
Him and Sandor, like, had some... Just show Leech this picture. Him and Sandor had, like, brotherly rapport. There you go.
That's yeah. The
two of them. You know, just put it on... It's just a picture of them on the red carpet. Pedro and Half-Thor
look
very contrasted next to one another, which is what I assume the actual fight looked like.
Okay?
When it happened in real life on that planet that George is telling us about.
So, yeah. I mean, the intrigues and that changed from show or from books to the show that, you know, just... affected the next season of the Dorne plot that, you know, it was one of those things that they dropped the ball on.
Oh.
Like almost
Welcome
from the very beginning. Yeah. And
it was like they knew. It's like someone had, this is my theory. I don't know if this is a real thing, but I feel like at some point everyone was like, oh, Game of Thrones, huh? Mm-hmm. Like after three or four seasons, and a whole lot of other people came in and were like, you know, those people that come in and they're like, oh, so this is a successful thing. Well, I think, and they have like, they have stake, or that's the wrong word. They have power and status in a place that's sort of tangentially connected to Game of Thrones. Let's call it HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And
just randomly.
and they're able to go, well, I think that it should be like this.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah. And they're like, no, but what about this? And then bad pussy. What about that? You didn't see enough to know that line, but it's a line.
I have seen that.
There's no way you've not
seen
that.
There's no way anybody on Earth hasn't seen that.
So, tangentially related to this.
Like that might be why or how some of that might have slipped through the cracks. It was of course people like action-packed sand snakes. Let's have a Power Rangers-style introduction for them. Like, they're holding their morphers out. It's kind of like how it went. But, you know, the rest of it, I don't mean to, like, tell you that you've made the wrong decision, but you have. The rest of it is not as bad as Dorne. I'm telling you, there's some enjoyable stuff to see. And I'm wondering if you just don't want to spoil yourself, potentially.
I don't think that you... I'm answering that question for you, which I don't think that... You said that the show has diverged so long from that. I don't think it's necessarily probably a spoiler thing.
So you're not worried about the spoiling at all?
No.
You just don't want to see it.
I just lost interest in it.
Philia. Okay. But what about...
It's just so confusing.
But what about Hodor at the tree?
Oh.
Is that not slightly interesting to you?
I think that'll happen, but I don't know if that'll happen at that location.
Right.
For sure.
So you do think it'll happen, though?
Yeah. Yes.
So you know everything that's happened. You just don't want to waste your time watching it.
Probably.
You probably know all the major beat points. But to me, it's like almost the same idea as comparative. I mean, we'll talk about reading George R. Martin's other works, and I know that he's not involved in the show, but I feel like the thing that is so interesting, and I've said this on this podcast 10 quadrillion times, but I think that something that's been so interesting about this A Song of Ice and Fire journey is that as A Song of Ice and Fire has been published over X amount of time, we've had
14 years.
All of his
no, 24, sorry.
Works.
Yes.
I forget the 2010s happened.
Yeah.
The 90s 10 years ago.
Yes.
But we've got all of his other work that is continuing to be published and that is kind of ebbing and flowing in pop culture relevance. We've got the TV series, which is its own like other thing that's come and gone since the series has been published. We have other TV shows that he's worked on and other things like that.
New one.
I feel like there are just so many resources to get inside of his mind, for better or for worse. I know the TV series isn't necessarily inside of his mind because a lot of that is outpaced him and whatever.
Yeah.
But there's like in order the opportunity to play in the world of A Song of Ice and Fire as well as the world of George R. R. Martin is so vast in a way that I don't know if we necessarily have. We're talking about Tolkien. There's other authors who we don't get that same luxury of having so many different resources and materials to kind of draw on. And that's part of the reason why I think A Song of Ice and Fire is so special and why we can have a podcast about it and have friends on the podcast, like, who also dedicate so much of their brain space to something like this, because there is that much stuff too. So I think the show plays an interesting part in that conversation is all I'm saying.
It became, for me, it just became the voice of, D&D as opposed to like the voice of George. Right. And that's fine. If you prefer one or the other or together, that's
perfect. That's your thing.
That is your thing. Mm-hmm. So
stop harassing you.
I know.
I just want to know how your brain works.
I just prefer the voice of George because, and I think I talked about this with you, Zach, a while ago. One of the things I started noticing is the plotsy of the show. That's the term that I put it. It's and it started because Val's more important in the story than I think a lot of people think, and she's not some like evil snow ice queen. Spider Woman or something like that. And
it's a good cosplay idea.
I was so close to doing that for Halloween this past year. I might do it again. Anyway.
You should.
They started just like, it's like Val wasn't actually missing from the show, or somebody wasn't actually missing from the show. They just started condensing people in locations and people in locations. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the ways that their own voice started to emerge that was different from George's, and which is why I don't feel like the show is spoilers.
Right. Is fair.
Yeah. So, and if people haven't read the books and that's it, that's what they know. That's fine. Mm-hmm. So, I enjoy the stuff, you know, the path along the way, not just the ending. So,
right, of course.
Yeah.
It's all about it's the friends we make along the way.
Yeah. Yes.
What TV shows do you like? What kind of stuff?
I am terrible at watching television.
What cinematic adventures do you like?
Oh, I'm terrible at that stuff. You put on MST3K.
Oh, nice.
And I am like, I will sit there until you will have to like remove the television.
Okay.
Because when I finally sit down to like watch TV or something like that, I really do like stuff that I can just laugh along to or zone out to. I did like things like The Sopranos, you know. I do like things like that because I do like the mental struggle of I should not be rooting for this guy, but I like him because he likes ducks. But because I'm also quickly and easily bored. It's like, you know, if one season's great and then the next season is not so great, I mean, I don't even realize when I'm not watching because I don't care.
Yeah.
But I wish I was that way. George has got your attention.
He does.
Big
I know.
Time.
I
Big
know.
Time.
Yeah.
You got all the books. Came up for the Starport signing.
Yep.
And you were excited about it.
Yeah. He was so excited when I showed him that copy of The Glass Flower.
I'm sure.
I mean, like, he...
I bet. That's so
really?
Cool.
Really? I mean, he just, like, lit up and I was like, yeah.
It's so cool. What a cool moment that you get to share with him, you know?
And it was the original copy, and everything that you wanted, or anything that you wanted signed, they had to inspect everything. Mm-hmm. And I showed him that. They're like, we're not even touching that because it's an old original copy.
Yeah.
You know, the glue and the book binding doesn't hold forever.
Right.
And, Rhea Golden was the first one that I met. She was, you know, we talked about the artwork and she did her signing and stuff like that. She's super sweet, extremely talented. And then I just stepped sideways to George and she was like, look at this. So
That's so cool.
It was a lot of fun. So
such a cool moment.
Yeah.
What's next for your blog? I mean, so yeah.
I am working on... and it's just taking me forever to get it done because I, you know, time. Where does time go?
I know.
I'm working on transcribing George's other football story. Mm-hmm. So this idea that you can't have like sci-fi and football together is
wrong.
Sounds like your dream.
Totally wrong.
Yeah, because I did transcribe one of his two football stories, and so I'm getting the other one finished and putting that one up. Oh, and I want to discuss in Martin world what fire and blood means. Mm-hmm. And how it relates to power and to slavery, and it's really not probably as positive as a lot of readers and such mm-hmm. might think it is, because again, it's related to going way too far, and it's not always what you think. So those are my next two things that I'm working on. So, and I do have a few people that, you know, check in and like we discuss books and the books and the stories and stuff. So I'm always open to having a lot more people in, because there's no way I can notate everything that I see in every book myself.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot. I mean, I'm impressed with the amount of ground you've been able to cover as on your own, but
yeah, it's like, I think it's 75 or 70 something stories.
Which is, and the stories aren't short. I mean, some of them are shorter, but yes, I mean, some of these are pretty hefty, like 60, 70 page things. Mm-hmm. So it's impressive. It's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that dedication.
And I want to get a Tough Voyaging reread going. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure how to do that though. Like if I just keep posting sections or not. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to keep my head into it with, you know, posting Caturday, because Tuff's big thing is he had all these cats.
I think that if you wanted to organize something, that you just have to put it out there.
So,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like on Reddit or something, wherever people are, put stuff where people are. Is that like, can people just post stuff?
I don't do that. I don't go where people are.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I was
lucky
to have found you, but what if that didn't happen? I'd be lost like this.
I'm not on Reddit, so that I would have to start to dip my toe into that. So
I say
I talk to myself.
I feel, I know how that is. If that's something you want to do, mm-hmm. I think that people would really appreciate your insight, because mm-hmm. you obviously put so much work into it. Not everyone does that.
Yeah, and I would love more of the discussion on it. So it's it's a part that's just taken over my life a little bit. So it's like, you can't keep it all into yourself. Right, you gotta get out there somewhere.
Right.
So
where can people find you then? Do you want to spell out your blog and other social media platforms that people could?
It's either The Fattest Leech of Ice and Fire.
Love it. Love
or there's no The. Is it just Fattest Leech or The Fat? I can't remember.
Fattest Leech of Ice and Fire.
Is it Fattest Leech?
Fattest Leech of iceandfire.com. Yeah. You want to explain what that, you told me what that was about, but you want to tell everyone listening what your name's about?
Oh, my name?
Yeah. The she-bear has begun to sing.
Yes, because she-bears, yes, that's, she-bears are a positive thing. My name means probably nothing as weird or intricate as it might seem with the overanalyzing that I do. It's, in the story, leeches suck the life out of the Boltons. They scare the shit out of the Freys, but they show how brave Arya is, and that is... I'm the biggest, fattest leech because Arya is my favorite, my second favorite Stark. So I think.
Who's your first favorite Stark?
Ghost? Bran?
Oh, Bran. Got it.
Oh, no.
Well, I guess if you say Bran, that sort of comes with the dire wolves, or at
sort
least.
Sort of, yeah.
Or at least Ghost.
I
a
see
little
them
bit.
Separately.
Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
Does George think that he's one of the talented ones?
From Song for Laia?
Yeah. You know how, like, some people are normals and some people are talented? He wrote that when he was 25.
So, yes.
What do you think?
I think he does.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because a few days ago, I was watching some videos and from his past. And one of the things that he said was, and I did note this somewhere, that not every author can stick with their own voice and through so many stories. And he mentioned that Jack Vance was one of the lucky ones that could write so consistently with his own voice between the stories. And he associated himself with being up to the level of Jack Vance.
Right on.
So I think he would consider himself to be...
In true Leeds fashion, you found evidence to support your claim.
Yes. I love it.
That's great. I think about people and things and about like what has all contributed to everything. And it's good to know what kind of people you're dealing with.
You mm-hmm.
know? And Hannah and I, we have come up in the same sort of social places that George R. R. Martin did mm-hmm. in our own like modern equivalent of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm familiar with a lot of the things that he talks about and whether directly or indirectly, the way that he describes the different people that live in Braavos or
yes,
the
yeah.
different people that are floating on barges.
Yes.
And I make like jumps of logic and try to associate that to the same sort of things that I would, because I can relate in certain ways to, like I said, like moments of me growing up in my 20s compared to like how times of his 20s went, obviously way separated by time and
yeah.
and all the other stuff that comes with being different people.
Mm-hmm.
But still, this sort of like science fiction, fantasy, convention.
Hotel lobbies,
hotel parties, jacuzzis, pools.
Yes, yes,
all
yes.
the stuff that comes with that.
Yes,
the people
yes.
that you meet, the friends that you know, and mm-hmm. all the lines in the sand that you draw and all those kinds of things. Is the story being given to us through an equal mouthpiece or someone that needs to dumb things down for everyone and explain it slowly? You know?
Like, oh, I don't think he dumbs it down at all.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think so. I think he still craves very much to be like a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
And because you were at Balticon, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even then he was walking around mm-hmm. and talking to people in the like the book room and the art room and stuff like that. And
I've met him like in the con suite at like sci-fi cons, well past his
yeah.
time when he could very easily not be participating in that right. kind of thing.
Yeah, I think he would be friends. I mean, he certainly enjoyed calling me a weirdo. I think he's a lot easier to talk to once you start just talking to him about things.
Which is awesome.
It is.
So much observational power mm-hmm. and emotional intelligence. I hope that, you know, there's people that are that sensitive can still be patient for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
That's really just what I want to know, you know?
Yeah.
And hopefully we, I guess, get a really good story because of that. That's
yeah.
what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping that all that time like equals out into some cool thing. I know that for better or for worse, we've all had a really good time with it. I know a lot of people feel, not you, but a lot of people feel like their sails are a little bit deflated. The wind's coming out of the sails a little bit after
yeah.
the ending of the series a little bit.
I don't think so.
Some people do. Some people
Well, yeah. Because I guess those are people that are just more concerned with just getting to the end mm-hmm. rather than...
The friends we make along the way.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Right.
And like, we still have two more books, probably at least 10 more years, you
yeah.
know, plus all the other stuff that...
What a relief for us and our job.
Maybe by the end of that, I'll get through all 75 stories,
yeah.
you know? Maybe by the end of that. Then I'll be ready for the other books.
Mm-hmm.
So,
will you come on our podcast again and talk about, like, other chapters of books? Here, better way to ask
I didn't
you.
Bore you guys to death already?
No, this has been so fun.
Yeah, no. I think we've got like 25 chapters left of A Feast with Dragons, so at least one or two of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You still read those books, right?
Oh.
You haven't like got it all plotted out and figured.
Are you kidding? Like, I wake up and with coffee in the morning, I put on the sweet, soothing sounds of Rory Dotrice, and I just,
Brian.
Yes. And his myriad of ways of pronouncing things and his little squeaky S's and elfish voices for Danny and Arya. And so I love it. Yeah. I'm still completely into Ice and Fire. I have not ever left it.
That's like the jumping point that's brought all the rest of this about.
Yeah.
Like that's the, yeah. That's awesome. We would definitely love to have you on for some chapters down the road.
It means I did a decent job.
You did an amazing job.
Faking my way through
you
it.
You did an amazing job.
Leech said she was nervous when she got here and was like, come on.
And you're like, we're the man. Yeah. So people can find you at fattestleechoficeandfire.com.
Mm-hmm.
They can go. Handle?
I think it's the same.
Okay.
Go check that out. Read all of your stuff. This is, I feel like we just barely scratched the surface on a lot of the analysis that you've done. Mostly we're just talking kind of overarching, but if you want to really dive in, check that out and read more of Leech's great work there. Leave comments and follow on social media and all that kind of stuff.
You're just Fattest Leech on Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling me who I am.
It happens to the best of us.
I'm like, whatever.
What else? You can send us an email. Contact gameofowns.com if you'd like, because we usually say that at the end of the podcast.
Yeah,
because
we don't do like owns necessarily for this podcast, so I feel jumbled up on how we close this out. But you can find us on Twitter at Game of Owns. You can find us on Instagram at Game of Owns, or like you said, contact at gameofowns.com.
I was going to say we are going to be making our next Feast of Dragons episode. This is going to be coming out soon. Probably a few days after this comes out. And
we put the call for owns out if you want to participate.
It's for Jamie Wan from A Dance of Dragons.
Yeah.
Which is Jamie's last.
Yeah.
I wonder
why. It's going to be a good chapter. So
the next podcast.
Stick around with us. Do we want to talk about Ice and Fire Con?
Yeah, we should. Ice and Fire Con is April 23rd through 26th. It is in Ohio at a place called Deer Creek State Park. It's protected by the government, people. It's a state park. There are secluded roadways to enter the property. We're talking like, I think maybe like 1 or 2 miles, there might be more, of tree-lined roads to take you away from society. And when you get farther away from society, anything can happen. And that's where we're holding this Song of Ice and Fire convention.
What's our code?
I think our promo code is GOO.
Okay.
If you go to iceandfirecon.com, tickets are still for sale if you haven't got your ticket yet and you want to come hang out with us and everyone else at the con. If you use the promo code GOO, that means that our presence at the con is justified. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Can we continue to go? That's April 23rd to 26th in Mount Sterling, Ohio.
Mount Sterling.
Okay. Yep. It's going to be a good time.
All right. Can we convince you to go? Like, pull you away from your responsibilities?
What?
Leech runs a farm.
Yeah, I do. I know.
Can you leave your farm, which I think sounds like a no?
Please. Well, all right, fine. I won't put you on the spot.
If you decide to go, make sure you use code GOO.
Yeah, exactly.
code GOO.
Well, thank you so much. It's been so much fun.
Thank you for having
me. We appreciate it. And we'll have you back on soon.
I'm down.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.